Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the January 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's begin as usual with our list of items to talk about. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Well, probably utmost newsworthy item is the outside markets, such as energy and the Dow investor confidence. And then secondly, we'd probably focus on the Southern Hemisphere if they're going to come through with that monster bean crop or not.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Are we going to have a weather event this year that's going to change this market around, or are we going to just continue to follow the outside markets?
And Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I would probably focus in on cash corn and bean basis as we move forward into spring and summer and what that looks like.
That's where I'd like to start. What do you think?
I think the biggest thing right now, we've seen decent movement enough where it seems like at the beginning of the month the processors have to pay up, the end user has to pay up to try and generate movement. And once that's accomplished at a certain level, they seem to get enough coverage on their books that they tend to fade back. So we're not really seeing a basis that is screaming higher yet. I think that's certainly in the cards potentially for spring and summer, specifically talking about corn. But it also is going to be dictated based on the fact that ethanol margins are running negative. The general consensus in the industry is generally they will run to negative 30 cents a bushel, because that's generally where most plants cash flow. And I think, obviously, you approach that area when you start talking about corn basis in the 50 to 60 over the respective future month options as you move into spring and summer. So their margins will dictate how high basis goes. But I think in the eastern Corn Belt, you're going to see some pretty hefty basis numbers here before all said and done.
And in the western Corn Belt, I made note, for instance, in Iowa, I checked Webster City just because Sue Martin's from there to see what they looked like in that area. And I think they were 25 under for corn and 53 under for soybeans or something. So they still have a relatively wide basis over there. Your view of the western part of the United States?
It makes sense that they do have a wide basis, Todd, simply because if you look at where the heart of the big production, you know, Minnesota, record-breaking yield, Iowa, 192 from a state from the USDA's January 12th crop report. So, you know, there's a heavy amount of supply, and that's where the biggest supply and glut in the market is. And the job of the market is to try to get it where it isn't, or from where it is to where it isn't. The challenge we've discovered is you can get landed values on the BN Railroad into Indiana's end users somewhere around 30 over the respective option, which is cheaper than what some of the eastern plants are paying on the eastern side of the state. The problem is most ethanol plants in Indiana in that area don't have the capacity to unload rail like that. So I think you're going to see a big dichotomy, and it's going to be interesting to see how high basis has to work in the truck market in the eastern Corn Belt, but I don't really anticipate a lot of appreciation, or at least the same magnitude in the western Corn Belt.
Okay, so what does that tell us about what producers should do? Because I think many of them have been considering, and many of our analysts have thought about this as well, locking in basis at this point for corn and or soybeans. And I'm going to stay with you for just a minute, please, Brian.
I think what we've tried to do, at least in my opinion, has been to spread our risk, because, again, it goes back to, am I bullish corn basis into the spring and summer, absolutely, to an extent. And I think you have to be cautious being bullish, realizing the short supply in Indiana and East forever because of the negative margins that ethanol may be facing down the road. So I think you have to spread your risk, but I do think being patient and not locking basis in all at once is a smart thing to do. Beans is an entirely different story. I think you see them, the end user surge to pay up for them, and then they get covered fairly quickly. And I also think, given the supply of beans just generally across the Corn Belt, that once our export window closes at the end of February and Brazil and Argentina start to take that market share from us, you're going to rely on the domestic processor. And again, getting rid of the glut of soybean meal is a big problem. Margins aren't that great for the bean processor either. So I'm thinking, if I'm going to set basis today, I'm focusing more on soybeans than I am corn.
Okay, so Wayne Nelson, we've heard some of this discussion. You're in the heart of one of the areas that is really has the hottest basis for corn. Ethanol plants can't unload. I think the important part was ethanol plants mostly cannot unload a train. So it's the truck values, I think, that are going to make the difference for a lot of the producers in those areas.
Well, in our area, Todd, probably in Lafayette and Linden, they can unload trains. So they're going to be able to not push as much as they had maybe in that area, where I'm not sure that Cloverdale down there at Poets can take a 100-car train. But I mean, I know they can take rails. So, you know, we're going to be able to watch some of that. I was told that a lot of the farmers out west, because of the low price, aren't selling enough grain that the elevators out there can sell that train, is one of the reasons we're not seeing some of the trains move into Indiana. But all in all, you know, we've seen 30, 35 over, and that's what they said those trains would go to. So I think that somewhere in that 30 to 50 over is a place that our farmers should probably be selling.
Kurt?
Yeah, it just depends where you're at, your locality. The fear or risk is, if you know, if this ethanol margins start to cut back, you know, are they going to take some downtime or not? But you know, another option to the basis would be go ahead and just move your cash grain and redo some ownership of a call option. Option volatility is historically low in through here, so you've got some ownership. So later on in June or July, if the weather kicks in, you've got some upside potential, but yet you've got your downside covered too. A basis is great in some cases, but if the market goes down, you can still take a lower price.
Hey, Brian, I have a different question for you. Can you explain the difference to me between a basis contract and a price later contract?
Oh, that's a great question. Price later contract is simply what the state of Illinois uses to identify grain owned by the elevator but yet in storage that a farmer has not produced. Basis contract, obviously you can take an advance on that. I think that's the biggest generator in the difference between delayed price later, and basis contract. They can advance money based on the current market at a 65% rate. Every commercial elevator is different on their policy on that, but that's the general norm for us. And we've seen a lot of that as we've approached the March 1 deadline, where producers seem to need cash. And rather than do what Kurt suggests and sell the cash and attach an upside call feature, which is what we would normally recommend, and I would agree with them, we have not got any traction. And I think the quickest way for them to generate cash has been to take that advance on that basis contract.
Yeah, so they're advancing on their basis contract. And both, by the way, in at least in the state of Illinois, are covered by the Grain Insurance Act.
That's correct.
All right. So they take, if they get 65%, then you're able to go ahead and market that on a basis contract, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean,
so it belongs to you.
It belongs to us. The only disposition of grain that does not belong to a commercial facility is that's what's placed in open storage. So anything, they pay storage charges, but they maintain ownership. Every other disposition, basis contract, price later, delayed price, cash contracts, that's all owned by the elevator once it comes in across the scale.
Yeah, so does this make very much of a difference in what you think is available in the marketplace? Because it doesn't look like it's sold, but it actually is flowing through the market, right?
Well, I think that's a great question. You know, are the farmers, we've seen a lot of commercials around us offering what's called free delayed price, you know, free storage, where they could come in and put it on a price later contract free of charge, and that's how movement's generated. And it also begs begs the question of how much will be left in the spring and summer if you have that in your marketplace. I don't know how prevalent it is in Indiana, but it's very prevalent in East Central Illinois.
Do you know, Wayne?
Yeah, I mean, yes, everybody is offering free DP over there now. They'd like to get grain moving. When there's trucks available, they love to get it in that way. It is a way to get farmers to move their grain while it's still in good condition and before it goes bad also. It's also a good way for a farmer that doesn't take good care of his grain, doesn't have big enough fans on his bins, doesn't like to climb in the icy weather and see what it's like. Move it in while it's still in good condition before it goes out of condition in the hot summer.
All right. So what does this all mean, do you think, Kurt?
Well, I think it's a matter of sitting down and exploring your options, you know, weigh each option, which best suits you and what's most flexible where you can kind of stay in the game here for a while. But like Brian said and Wayne, the shortage is in the Eastern Belt versus the Western Belt. So the function of the market, which has been well advertised for quite some time, is we're going to move the grain from the West to the East. And here in the East has got the benefit because, you know, we got rail, we got ethanol and so forth. So there's going to be some opportunities out there. It's just a matter of finding one that fits your own needs. It preserves working capital.
Let's switch gears just a bit. One of the items this week and for quite some time now that has been having an impact on the marketplace is the price of crude oil. It dropped to somewhere near $26 a barrel at one point, though it has managed to come back. Is this good news, and can we hold on, and have the grain markets decided to separate themselves a bit from this as well?
That's the the million-dollar question, Todd, is we've always thought that cheaper energy cost was cheaper production cost, was cheaper transportation cost, that should lower the cost for everybody and leave more money in the consumer's hands. And we seem to think that crude oil going down has hurt the world economy terribly. I don't understand. When I went to the University of Illinois, we were taught that was a good thing. I mean, you know.
That's the first problem right there.
It comes from the ISU grad. Yes.
But we are seeing that because of the ethanol, because of the blending rates, and that it's negative to blend ethanol now, that there are people that are going around saying that we'll probably be, you know, closing down, taking down time, especially if it's hard to get corn in some of these ethanol plants. But all in all, we would think that it should be positive.
You know, Kurt, you're outnumbered 3-1 here, U of I grads to you, right?
I better come up with something real intelligent then.
That's right. Okay, Brian, so you are in a company that produces ethanol and one that sells gasoline and oil, Marathon, that is. How does this all work, and how much of an impact does it have, and what's the line inside the company about the low price of crude oil?
Well, I think Wayne kind of hit the nail on the head. It's a little confusing if you think back to when ethanol started, you know, because a higher price of crude meant, you know, better demand for ethanol, and we were correlated in following things. But really, in reality, nothing's really changed. You know, negative crude is going to pull down corn price simply because it's an energy product, or at least partially an energy product. And I think when you look at miles driven and the fact that ethanol futures are higher than RBOB gasoline, it makes it hard to look and say, well, E15, E85, it makes sense. It doesn't really make sense, and you're already up against a blend wall. So unfortunately, the correlation between oil prices and corn is pretty strong, and I think until we see better miles driven and more gasoline consumed, you're going to continue to run into a headwind from that crude, those crude prices. And I was taught a long time ago not to try and catch a falling knife. So I think trying to figure out where the bottom is in the oil market is going to be pretty tough to do.
Easier to do in the corn market, do you think?
That's a great question. I think the one thing, another phrase that I heard that I really think is pertinent to the current dynamic is you've got a fund position that is extremely short in corn, maybe overdone that to a certain extent, and they're short and sassy in one corner, and you've got the farmer who potentially is long and wrong at the present time in the other corner, and let the boxing match begin, because I think there's a cloud over the market right now that the farmer at some point is going to have to generate cash, have to sell grain. And you've got the fund who's probably overshort and overstayed his welcome, where we're having a hard time finding more bearish news to drive prices lower. So it's which one who gives up the most, I guess, or the soonest here moving forward.
Let the boxing match begin. That brings me to the weather, although that may be way too late for things to happen unless more takes place in South America, I suppose.
Well, Todd, you know that the weather has affected the early harvest in Brazil. They got planted late. We've got the early part of the harvest. The yields were coming in lower than expected. But yet we've got more time because some rains are coming in because they did get planted later. And so we don't know what to think for sure. We had weather forecasters that said we're going to have a hotter than normal summer because of La Nina. I was told today by one weather forecaster that they were pushing back the El Nino ending and La Nina starting, and we might not be as hot as what they were talking about, but that's the thing we're looking at.
Yeah, and I think we're quickly starting to shift to the U.S., the southern U.S. Texas farmers are looking 30 days from now from trying to put some corn in the ground, and they're extremely wet in some areas, so it's going to go quickly to the southern half of the U.S. here as we go into the first part of March.
Is it weather that will be required, do you think, to put some push under the marketplace, or...
Well, it's kind of step one would probably be acreage. We'll get the acreage mix coming in. We'll have some numbers in February here and, of course, the March number. But weather's going to be the dominant factor. We need some type of catalyst to spook the public or build some enthusiasm. And the quickest and most powerful thing is the weather.
Yeah, so you're talking about the world, outlook numbers from February, and then, of course, the prospective plantings in
Farm
March.
Futures did their survey, and they had 89.5 million acres of corn being planted. Last year was 88 million, and beans had 82.2, and last year was 82.71, and that was a survey of 1,550 farmers. Now, that's quite a bit lower than Informa's numbers that we got earlier this week, and their numbers actually were adding 2 million acres to the total cropland and were a lot larger than these. So, but these were 1,550 farmers that seemed to be talking pretty honestly.
Yeah, it looks like we're chasing that 2 to 3 million wheat acres that disappeared, right, in the wheat seedings number.
But Informa's included that, I mean, for total, and they were still 2 million acres more seeded this year than last year.
Yeah, and that's an interesting mix because you look at soft red, when Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, actually positive because of the higher price, but you take your Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, some of the Dakotas there, we lost acres there. Now, what they're going to do with that, I guess we're going to find out fairly quickly.
Yeah, it is the lowest winter. Did you read this from Daryl Good on Monday? The lowest winter wheat seedings, second lowest over time. I think the first is 2010, but those two since 1913. So a really low number of wheat acres in the United States.
Guess Brian, the wheat price is doing its job.
Yeah, I guess the wheat price is doing its job, I suppose. So, Brian, your thoughts on wheat? Because your company deals with wheat, in particular soft red, and going out of the Maumee or Toledo area more often than not.
The first thing I would say is I think the farmer's probably glad he's incented not to plant wheat by wheat prices, because the last 3 or 4 years he's been burned by quality challenged wheat. So I think at least in our draw territory in the eastern Corn Belt, we're seeing wheat acres down, not only because of price, but because farmers are just tired of struggling with vomitoxin and the things that they deal with when growing the wheat. We haven't had a good milling wheat crop, it seems like, in a while. So I think that's part of it. I also think that, you know, the relationship in returns probably will impact total acreage, and why acreage may be a little bit lower and people are wondering where disappearing acres are going. I think some of them, I don't know if necessarily I'm assuming idling, but someone the other day suggested maybe going back into pasture. But I think seeing less acres is probably prudent. But, you know, the one thing I do want to add in talking about weather moving forward, and I think that is a good card that the farmer's hoping that happens. But if you think about an interesting chart I saw this week, the biggest thing the U.S. farmer has right now working against him is the strength of the U.S. dollar. And if you look at other world currencies, I think that is going to play more havoc for us than any other factor moving forward. The Russian ruble, a record relationship here this week. You look at the Brazilian real, the Argentine peso. You can go on and on. But the message that the world producer is getting is to continue to plant fence row to fence row. Unfortunately, the U.S. farmer is not getting the same message. So that is a significant headwind we're going to have to deal with moving forward.
I think I did see something about Black Sea exports were up substantially in the last week or month or something along those lines because the ruble is so low priced. And it's really a lot about the competition on the world market and the ability or inability in this case of U.S. products to compete.
Yeah, it's really discouraging. You look at a wheat carry out and the percentage of export demand we have. I mean, it's just a downhill ski slope, and hopefully we will not lose market share in corn or market share in beans.
Speaking of beans, China looks like they're going to import as many soybeans as they possibly can in the coming year. At least that's what they're saying up front, which is a little unusual. I suppose maybe they're, I don't know what why they would come out with that up front, but they did.
Well, there's two things, Todd. Number one, they were buying a lot of DDGs from us, and those, of course, they've slowed down, talking about the dumping, the World Trade Association thing, everything like that. They have to replace that with some bean meal or something along the way. Their crushers, you know, need to make money, and they like that along the way, and they'd rather buy the beans, have them crush them over there than buy the DDGs is what it looks like. So I think they're looking ahead. They're seeing cheap prices out of Brazil. We got a lot more coming out of Argentina than we've had the last few years, and they're going to pick it up.
Yeah, it's very optimistic. They project to import 85 million metric tons. USDA's at 80.5 million metric tons. And the hog numbers are slightly lower, so they are looking forward, like Wayne said.
Yeah, so they're looking for protein, but it'll be at the expense of the DDGs, and we're likely to have a lot of DDGs, I would think, hanging around, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, China was the largest purchaser of U.S. DDGs, and we ship them a lot. And if they've cut way back, that means they're going to take away bean meal here in the U.S.
Well, these feeders have an opportunity to use good quality feed now versus when corn and beans were at the higher end of the spectrum. So this feed usage, true feed usage, should remain somewhat strong.
Yeah, it's just kind of a swap of what they're using, whether it's bean meal or corn or DDGs, and they're looking for the proper protein mix at this point. What's your best thought for farmers on new crop? Let's switch gears just a little bit. If they should do anything at all at this point?
Well, stay flexible. We've been implementing strategies where you got a price floor because we don't know what type of production to expect and what type of price to expect. But we like defending, you know, $4, using that as some type of a strategy of buying a put, selling a call, but have something in place because we don't want corn to go on down to $3.50 and really tighten the cash flow up.
You'll be glad, Wayne Nelson, on the closing market report Thursday afternoon. Gary Schnitke was on talking about potential crop insurance premiums. They're likely to go up, but he is just substantially opposed to trying to cut costs by lowering premiums, saying the risk is just too great and the benefit is not big enough.
Oh, I think Gary's 100% right. I think that this is going to be a very, very pivotal year to be able to stay in farming, and we just don't want that bottom locked out. One of the things we did this week is we bought some 880 put and sold two 960 calls for even money. That puts a 960 top on twice as many bushels, but it gives you an 880 bottom on some. It's a place to start. Is it great? No, but, you know, 880 might be really good if we don't have some other problems.
Your thoughts, Brian?
I can't disagree with what Wayne and Kurt said. I think the defensive posture is the appropriate measure for the farmer. Absolutely agree with Gary. You cannot cut crop insurance. It's the cheapest put the farmer has on the marketplace. I would be a little more defensive or lean towards the bean complex today. I think $4 is the number one protecting corn, but I think it's more likely we can hover around that area longer than what we can on the soybean side of things. If demand does not continue to catch up to China, carryout could grow. I've seen numbers floated with a 7 in front of them for new crop beans. So the bean complex has us a little more worried and a little more defensive at this point.
As in 700 million bushel carryout, that is a big number.
Yes, yeah. I think that a lot of it, you know, you think about talking to farmers and what their bankers are looking at their balance sheet, and a lot of them would say, you know, if we can't project a positive return, let's plan to lose less. And the best way to do that is plant more soybeans. So I don't necessarily think that will happen in East Central Illinois, but I think in other areas of the Corn Belt where they don't regularly see 225, 250 bushel corn, there'll probably be a heavier lean towards beans this year.
That would mean the nearly 3 million acres that disappeared, most of them in the hard red winter wheat, you think will go to soybeans?
Great question, because following wheat with corn, I don't know, that's a tough one. Or with beans, excuse me. I said that backwards.
Right.
I think, you know, that tends to lean from a fertility standpoint easier to corn, but maybe not. I think the economic relationships will have a lot more to say maybe than agronomic this year.
All right, let's wrap her up and get a final word from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, I think that Brian offers some really good hope for maybe the basis in the corn market here. But let's be alert, and if we do get a 10 or 15 cent bounce, that we do some of those basis contracts.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of staying flexible and sitting down, figuring out what type of strategy that you're comfortable with. There is no real right star strategy. It's just a matter of one's going to keep you in the game.
And Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County.
I think the name of the game is defense. Defense generally wins games in the sporting arena. I think that's the way it's going to play out for the farmer in 2016. So maintain a defensive posture and put a floor in on some of your risk.
Our thanks to our panelists today, including Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Yule by Extension's Todd Gleason.